Daniel, and he is half Thai. This is his first time visiting here, so he's not familiar with any Pali terms, so he's quite new to the Dharma, but we just had one or two very small discussions. Daniel just asked me a question, and I'd like to encourage him to ask you for your answer. He asked me, how does it help, or what difference does it make in life to understand about all these realities?
There are realities right now. It depends on whether you would like to know it or you just don't want to understand it. That's all. So what do you think? What is better?
Well, of course I'd like to understand what's going on. Then,
because it's
the
here and now.
What if I put it this way? We are here learning to understand life itself. What is life? Would you be interested in understanding life? Right.
Of course, yeah.
So what is life? Even just a very simple question like, what is life?
Well, what is life?
Yes.
Well, you can define it as a biological, from a biological scientific
side. Not only your thinking, the truth, what is life? Not what one thinks.
Not by thinking. What is life? That's a good question.
Is there life now?
Well, I think there is life, yeah.
Always think. So, what do you think is life now?
Life now?
Yes.
For me, it's like there are people here, I'm here. I breathe, I see,
And the way to understand is keep on thinking or asking about what is the truth of it. For example, people. What are people?
What are people? Well, people for me, it's another person. It's a living being. That's a person. Yeah. So there's a lot of living being around me.
Does a person see?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is seeing a person?
Is. Oh, I don't understand the question.
What seeing a person? Yeah. She was asking, is seeing a person?
Seeing consciousness.
Is hearing a person?
Oh, no. Not. Well, a person is, for me, is a living being, whether that talks or not, whatever, but it's of course, I see it, I can feel it.
Can we say a person is a combination of things?
Yes.
Different things,
yeah. Yes. I would say something like that.
What are things?
So these things, a combination of which makes a person, what are they?
No, well, I'm a very scientific person, so for me a person is basically they're kind of a combination of molecules.
Yeah, but that's again thinking what we've learned by science. In terms of what can be directly known at the present moment, what is there that we take as being part of a person? One of those things that makes up a person. Which of those things is real at the present moment?
In other words, relating back to what we discussed before, is person reality or is it a concept?
Well, in this sense, it's a concept, the person, I would say. Yeah.
If it's a concept, it's an idea. Is that correct?
It's an idea.
For example, if there is no thinking about person, is there a person?
Well, there wouldn't be a person if there's no thinking about the person.
So thinking is real, but the person is an idea or a concept. So seeing now, is seeing real or is seeing a concept?
Well, according to me, if I see someone, that, I mean, for me, seeing is something real. This is what I see. this is something...
So seeing is real, and what is the I that we think sees? Is I real, or is I a concept?
Well, the I for me is a real thing, I mean... But
the I, Daniel, is that real?
Well, I hope so, otherwise... I mean, I think I'm real, but because otherwise I wouldn't be here and be able to experience the people around me.
Right, but yeah. Let's say that seeing is real because it can be directly known at this moment that seeing is real. Mm-hmm. It's experiencing whatever can be seen at the present moment. And hearing is real because it's experiencing what can be heard at the present moment.
Yep.
But the idea of it's me who's seeing or hearing is, if you like, a different level of reality. And it's not real in the same sense as the seeing or the hearing. Is that fair enough? No.
It's a bit,
yeah. Can I ask you?
Yeah.
You sound like you strongly believe that there is a person. I mean, we're talking about seeing, hearing and all that.
Yeah.
And you believe that there is a person who sees, who hears, who thinks, who touches. Is that what you believe?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Yes.
I know that there is I know that there is the seeing. But where is the I?
The I?
I.
The I?
The self. I, the self.
The Daniel.
The I... Well, I think that, yeah, that wouldn't really exist as a physical object or something in my body. I mean, I'm just like water and just sitting here with some skin and bones, but the eye, I think the person inside, that's something I would say
when will it
artificial or something that, yeah. I don't know, it's probably even transferable to other persons, I don't know, but
will the eye show up?
Hmm?
When will the eye show up?
The eye.
When
the eye shows up. I think in actions, and that's when the eye comes out, because if there is a different eye in every person, they act differently. I think it's kind of a soul, maybe?
Can we say it's assumed?
The eye.
Yeah.
Yes, it's assumed there is something there. Yeah.
Because no one can see it, no one can know it at all.
Yes.
But there's seeing, there's hearing, there's thinking, all at different moments.
Yeah.
Conditioned by different conditions too. But I cannot find the eye. But there is seeing.
Yes, you can
see. If there is no seeing, can there be the idea I see?
If there's no seeing, then there can't be an I, no, I see.
That's a blind person, he doesn't see.
Yes.
Right, but there's still the idea of a blind person. So if there's no seeing, there's still the possibility of the sense of I. But then in case of a blind person, he probably thinks I hear, I touch, I taste, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So Chan's question is that if there were not these experiences through the five senses in the mind, mm-hmm. would there be the sense of an I?
But if there would be no five senses, what would you be? You would just be a back. We know, like, yeah, they couldn't experience the world, so there's that there would be no one there.
No one there. So actually, there's no one. Because seeing is seeing, hearing is hearing, thinking is thinking. All are different moments, different realities, that's all. No I, right? Really?
Well, I would say there is an I, because there is someone that I think everyone is different, and I think the person inside is acting according. I mean, there's some mechanism that makes you or anyone doing a certain action and behave in the world as one behaves. I mean, like, so I think I've never thought about, like, why do I walk from A to B? But there's, I think there's like, there is something controlling my mind doing things. Or also how I react in a situation. As a Daniel react this way, whereas Sarah might react differently. So there must be a difference between the two person that I think is distinguished by, not an I is maybe a wrong, but there's something that I think is controlling the action of the person.
Kun Daniel?
Yes.
Kun Daniel in seeing, Kun Daniel in hearing, and Kun Daniel in thinking is the same Daniel, or different entirely? Because right now there is seeing, there is hearing, and there is thinking.
Yes.
But where's actually Daniel? Except the thought that we think that there is a Daniel.
Well, let's turn it this way. I mean, the I is what people would call a personality, maybe. And I think I experience people differently, how they are, how they're. Or maybe I would even say it's a kind of a energy that people distribute. That's basically something that I believe in, that we kind of a form of an energy that controls, and the vibrations between the people are different.
That difference, is that necessarily accountable by there being two eyes, a Daniel eye and a Sarah eye, or could they be two groups of seeing and hearing and thinking in different ways according to each set of groups, if you see what I mean?
It's probably true. I mean, probably we see things differently. We experience things differently. We taste things differently. So there is something different.
Yes.
Whether that's a different eye or a different... what's chemical receptors that are different on the tongue, for example?
I think that's the question. Whether the fact that there's a difference between individuals means that...
But of course we see probably the same black, or the same, or at least the same color somewhat.
But we think about it differently.
Yeah.
And is that difference accounted for, must be accounted for only by the fact that there are two eyes, or could it be accounted for by another reason, and that would be that the experiences behind the seeing of the visible object over the years have been different, and therefore the thinking about what is seen or heard differs according to that?
That's definitely probably the case, that when you have memories, experience, that things turn out to be different.
So we still come back to Ajahn's question of where is this I? You know, there is seeing, hearing, there's thinking and memory, and there's the cumulative effect of different experiences in a lifetime. That's all very well, but where is the I bit that we assume is lying behind it all, or overseeing it all, or controlling it all.
Where?
Where?
It's non-existent in the real world. It's not really existent. Mm. Physically, it's not existent.
So that's why I suggested it's assumed.
Yes, well, yeah. That makes sense.
Right.
It is assumed. You can say it's something. You can say it's a concept.
Right. And is it a valid assumption, or is it an assumption that, when it's examined, isn't based on reality?
Well, I think it's a valid assumption because humans are different. So there is difference between the humans somehow. So,
but I thought we'd agreed that the difference wasn't necessarily accounted for by the eye, but rather by the different experiences and...
Okay, well, if you bring it back to that point, that there is probably something that is... Yeah, but there's something that took up all the experience. Right. So what is that?
But regardless of all this, and I don't know that it's necessary to pursue that to the nth degree,
yeah.
The subject of our discussion yeah. here is what is real at the present moment
yes.
and can be understood,
yeah.
directly experienced or verified. So in that list of things, which includes seeing and hearing and thinking, the eye doesn't feature. Because
it's an assumed. Yeah. It doesn't really exist. You can say,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, earlier you were expressing the idea that you seem to accept that the body are just mere impersonal elements. You're willing to accept that it's just. Molecules and whatnot, right?
Yeah,
there's no self in there because they're just chemicals and chemical reactions and physical realities that rise and fall away by its own conditions. Would that not also apply to the mind? Seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, thinking, each are mental realities that arise by conditions.
Yes.
So that can be understood.
Yes.
In the moment.
Yes.
When seeing arises, it can be understood.
Yes.
Whereas the eye is never, doesn't appear except in thinking.
Doesn't appear in his thinking, but how about the soul? Is that a concept?
But that, isn't that a concept? I mean, otherwise, how would we even refer to it? Where does the idea of soul come in experience? Because seeing is only seeing, hearing is hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, thinking. And this is our life.
Mm-hmm.
So, wherefore the need for soul.
But how about the feeling would be basically, so if I feel bad, so where would that come from then?
Feeling is also another mental reality.
That's a mental...
Feeling arises all day. Pleasant, unpleasant feeling. They also arise by conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Same with memory. Same with attachment, aversion, kindness. Aren't these just realities arising and falling away by impersonally by conditions?
No, it is. Somewhat, yeah.
And if you consider it carefully, you can see that this is just what life is. Different elements rising and falling away.
Mm-hmm.
No need to posit a self. No need to posit a soul.
Oh, there's no need for it, yeah.
I mean, there would have to be a function of a soul. And can you think of anything?
Yeah, that's a good point. But maybe, well, maybe there's the function is to store memories of feelings, kind of thing. But then again, I mean, I understand what you want to say. It's not that, but the question is.
Again, it would be assumed.
Yes.
So, in short, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is that there are just these impersonal elements arising and falling away throughout the day, throughout life. And as we mentioned before, at each moment of life, there is a moment of experiencing. So when you ask where they are stored, at each moment of experiencing conditions the next one. So each memory is not lost, it's carried by each of those moments of experience, and the same with each feeling. So what you call personality are actually these particular conditioned realities. So we can say in a conventional sense, oh well, Daniel's personality is this, Sarah's personality is this, but actually there are just these different mental and physical phenomena arising and falling away each moment by different causes and different conditions. And each memory is carried to the next one. But so the more we learn about the details of these different elements, the more we see that that's all there are, mental and physical elements. No one there, no soul there, except just as an idea.
Yeah, but...
But when you speak about a soul, it seems something which stays. But Suki spoke about all those different moments of feeling and seeing. And like Kusala Chitta, you were helping me, but then there was seeing afterwards, and I was feeling, but also short, very, very short. And when you speak of a soul, it seems that it's something that stays, but there is nothing that can stay.
Just to help you to get an idea, you may wonder how memory, if there's no place to store memory, how it feels like it must be stored somewhere. That's why we can remember so many things, right? But you probably heard that the Buddha, for example, could recall past lives, countless past lives from long, long time back. So that actually shows that it can't be stored in some physical thing. It's a mental, something that's mental reality.
Okay, but now if the Buddha can recall several past lives, there must have been something that collected all those memories from the past life.
So the memory itself marked, and it's not lost. It's a mental reality. It's not like a chip, a memory chip that can store things, that runs out of gigabytes, but this one does not run out because it's mental, and we don't understand that, how it works, but we can appreciate that it's not as we, in our knowledge, in our ignorance, try to imagine things, how things work. We are totally ignorant about how the mind is, what the mind
is. Works the mind, yeah. So you would say that basically memories or whatever happened, I would say, events in the past, they get stored somewhere. Oh,
how's that? They're never lost.
They're never lost, but where are they kept?
For example, now you've seen me, you won't forget.
Yeah.
It's because there's the reality of memory that comes to mark, make a sign of this.
Yeah.
Many, many moments.
Yeah.
And next time you see me, you remember. That's not because it's stored in your brain or anything.
Yeah.
It's because of that reality, memory, which arises with all moments of consciousness from the beginning of time to the end. And it performs that function not only just to remember, but also store and recall what's been remembered in the past.
Daniel, you were saying then, how is it stored then? So I'm presuming you're thinking there must be something that stores it.
Yeah, because otherwise you can't recall it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you imagine that is?
Well, the universe, or I don't know, like there's energy in the world or something, because if he says it's not the brain that, like, a chip would store a certain memory, because I pass away, people would still know that everyone that is here and still lives on, they would know, okay, he has been sitting here, they can recall it, so it's not in my brain, it's stored in my brain, but it's, so if this moment in time is it's that he was able to recall things from past lives, so he was, must have been, well, the question is, what is a past life? Has the past life been experienced physically by a person? So in my past life, was I a person? Well, I'm talking about I, but was the thing in myself in another person? And then it just passes on to the next life and next life. And so there's something carry on this, all this memory somehow.
So I'm imagining you're thinking that it's something that, or like something that has this ability to, or like there is like a person or a something, because we're always presuming that it must be something other than what it is. So, because from listening to everybody, I'm aware that part of the trap often is that we think there is something that does all this, which precludes our, which precludes the possibility that really there is not something that does all these things in a sense. Perhaps there are realities that are rising and falling away and each having different functions. So what I'm trying to lead to is that we're often presuming that there is something that does it, and that precludes the idea or precludes the possibility that there may not be something that does all that. That maybe it's just about different experiences performing different functions rather than, you know, an overall controller. That's what I was trying to get at, that somehow gets in the way of us beginning to see that there is actually just different realities rather than some controlling factor, which we often call I, or a person that can get in the way. You know, I mean, I've actually been really impressed the answers that you've been giving, because if you've never heard much of Dhamma before, I think you're doing really well. And it's a difficult area. But, yeah.
Let me...
Yeah, sure.
You like science, so let me just give the example or the simile of an electric current. So where is that energy stored? Actually, at each instant of that electric current, the energy continues on. And in terms of realities, at each moment of life, there is a moment of experiencing. I'll give you one word which we mentioned earlier, citta. Citta is a moment of experiencing. So during life, there is always one citta, one moment of experiencing, followed by the next moment of experiencing, and the next moment of experiencing, like an electric current. And the memories, the feeling, the thinking are all carried with each citta, each moment of consciousness from one to the next. So seeing is a kind of citta, a kind of experiencing. Hearing is a kind of citta. Thinking is a kind of citta. At each moment of life, there is a citta, a moment of experiencing, carrying all the tendencies and what you would call the personality and the habits from one cheetah to the next. And usually we think there is a Daniel or a Sarah, but actually there are just these different cheetahs, one at a time. So now at this moment in life, that's actually all there is in life. There's just this one moment, this one cheetah now, this one moment of seeing now, or this one moment of hearing now, or this one moment of thinking now, and what was experiencing a moment ago has completely gone, and what hasn't come hasn't come. So there's only ever just a moment of experiencing. So the world, in fact, is just this one moment of experiencing, but it carries all those habits or personality characteristics from one to another. So this is why each moment of experiencing can condition the next one. And so in reality, there is no Daniel, there is no me, there is no I. There is just cheetah accompanied by its different mental factors such as memory or feeling, and different physical phenomena, which, as you agreed, are just elements that arise and fall away. So actually the cheetahs, the mental factors, and those physical phenomena are all just elements arising and falling away, conditioning each other in different ways. And it's that thinking about those different mental and physical phenomena that we call a soul or a Daniel. But if there were no elements, no mental and physical phenomena arising and falling away, there would be no idea of Daniel or Sarah.
Yeah, just
there couldn't be any...
Anything, yeah.
It could be anything, yes.
Anything.
I mean, we're not really like robots, but just as a robot is just an imperson, you know, something that is made up of impersonal things working, right?
Yeah.
So same here. It's just impersonal elements. The difference between us and robots is that there is life here. Robot, there's no life. And our accumulations, we accumulate from moment to moment. Every moment of experience is changing because of the previous moment, change in accumulations.
So what is life then? So what's...
What do you think? So far, what you've heard, what do you think? If, what it would boil down to?
Well, the life as I have it so far is an experience of, as you said, like moments of cheetahs, but a chain of events, basically, that's the life that happens. Chain of cheetahs, yeah. So that's through the... And then, yeah.
Mm. Although it's not so necessary to think in terms of a chain,
yeah.
But of course it does appear like a chain because it's one moment conditioning the next on and on. But then we must remember that what's risen and fallen away completely, it's gone. It's just one reality at a time. So there's no chain to look back. There's no chain existing. There's just one reality, one moment.
So as we mentioned briefly before, life really just consists of those kinds of realities or elements which can experience an object, which are the cheetahs and the mental factors, the cheetah seekers. So the cheetahs and the cheetah seekers are those realities which can experience an object. Seeing can experience what is visible. Hearing can experience sound. Memory can experience an idea. So these are realities which can experience an object. And then there are those realities, rupa, those realities which cannot experience anything. For example, now at a moment of touching, the hardness which is touched, the hardness cannot experience anything. The sound cannot experience anything. So life really just consists of these different kinds of realities, those realities which can experience an object and those realities which cannot experience anything. And the reason we discuss in more detail about these realities, about the cittas, the cetasikas and the rupas, these different realities, is to really begin to understand that in life there are just these different elements, that actually there is no one, no self, no thing there.
So what distinguishes us then from a tree, for example? Because, I mean, a tree stands there, and, well, people say it's a living thing, but it also, I can say, the tree experienced the wind, it experienced if I want to cut this bark.
For the tree, there are these different rupas, the hardness, what is visible, and so on. But do you think a tree has any cittas? Is there any thinking? Is there any experiencing of rupas or other realities? Is there any seeing? Is there any hearing? Is there any thinking?
I probably think, yeah. I think that a tree probably, it might feel pain. But, well, we don't know. But it might feel pain if you want to cut it down.
Right. Let's assume that you've never heard anything through education. Yeah. But you're born and you experience the world like any person. You see people and you see animals and you see trees. You would conclude that animals and human beings are living beings. But to believe that a tree is a living being would not be natural. Why? Because you can see the behavior of humans and animals. They have volition. They seek to get food, shelter, right? They communicate. So a tree doesn't do that. So there is a difference.
Yeah, probably. Probably, most likely. Well, when we look at it now from a biological view, yes. But we don't really know.
Yeah, we don't know, but we can begin to slowly understand through understanding the mind, right?
Yep.
Good, Daniel. What can we actually say that we know for sure right now? What can we say that without any kind of concepts or without any kind of thinking, we can say that we are actually seeing. There's seeing, there's hearing, there's feeling, and there's thinking. We can know that for sure, that it's there. But the trees and other kind, people, everything is all just thinking about a concept. And we are experiencing the world through our thoughts and mind. So in Buddhism, what we actually try to study is about what we are experiencing right now. And we are trying to let go a little bit of the presumptions that we have, whether it's useful or unuseful. And we try to get down to the truth of what's really here and how does one actually experience life. So in deciding whether it's the tree thinks or you thinks, what's most important is understanding that right now there's just seeing, hearing, thinking, and there are these realities in life that we actually experience. Without these things, there wouldn't be any people, there wouldn't be any tree, there wouldn't be a concept of those things.
But so, if I'm, I don't know, I have an accident, I lose all my five senses more or less. I don't feel anymore, I don't hear anymore, I don't see anymore. So I lose all my five senses, so my brain still is alive somewhat. Is there still life then? Because I can't really experience the moment anymore.
Well, there'd still be the memory of everything you'd experienced before you lost your five senses.
Okay.
It's just like deep sleep. You're still alive when you're in deep sleep. You're not experiencing anything, yeah. Right? So you wouldn't say that there's no life at that time. But it's not the experience of the five senses.
I think a friend, Trent Bort,
made a really interesting point that, yes, certainly we can speculate about trees, and we know that there are some quite sophisticated experiments, that are done that seems to indicate that they know a lot more than we have realised, and that may be so at a certain level. And there will always be these kind of experiments and these kinds of speculations. You know, according to Buddhist teachings, there is trees have a kind of life. We'll just kind of leave it at that at the moment. They have a kind of life. It's different. We have, yeah, it's a kind of life. But that's the kind of, Rupajivadindriya, the Pali word is.
You mean this, you're pointing out the fact that trees are different from rocks? Right?
Yes, yeah. Totally, yeah. They have a faculty of a kind of experience. So,
trees?
Rupajivadindriya.
Rupajivadindriya.
Oh, no, sorry, no, my mistake. I apologize. No, it's wrong. I mislead you there, Daniel.
But
sorry.
Anyway, no rupa can experience anything.
No, no.
And if we're talking about the faculty of life, we're just talking about living beings. Because that faculty of life is conditioned by karma. And so only living beings have the result of karma. Trees don't have the result of karma at all. So when we talk about the rupas that make up the table or the tree, there are different rupas, but there isn't the life faculty rupa, because that is conditioned by karma, and it only arises in living beings.
Talking about Pali word, can you explain more about karma?
Okay. Thank you very much. So karma, everyone is familiar with a conventional idea. People who've never heard about Buddhism talk about doing good and bad karma or having the results of karma, but usually they think in a very conventional sense. They think if they go to the temple and make merit, this is good karma. And if they earn lots of money, this is the result of good karma. Or if they are caught up in a flood, this is a result of bad karma. But this is just a conventional story. Actually, at this moment, there is, at each moment in life, there is a reality of intention. So at a moment of seeing and hearing and thinking, there is a moment of intention. And at moments of kusala and akusala, wholesome and unwholesome thinking, unwholesome and unwholesome cittas, that intention can lead to good or bad deeds. For example, at this moment of considering and understanding a little bit about the realities of life, at that moment of wise considering, there is that reality, that good intention. And that is what is meant by karma, which, when it's strong enough, can bring results in future. So actually, karma refers to a reality which is intention, which arises at every moment in life, and at certain times can be wholesome or unwholesome, leading to good and bad deeds, which can at a later time bring results. And the results are not what we think about in conventional idea, like being caught in the flood or going to the temple, but actually at this very moment, seeing is a result of karma, hearing is a result of karma. So even the result of karma is just a citta, a cetasika, or a rupa. So whatever we're talking about, there are only realities. So no matter whether the topic is karma or anything else, we're just talking about different realities in life. And some realities are cause, like at moments of kusala and akusala, wholesome and unwholesome thinking. These realities are cause, and some realities, such as at moments of seeing or hearing, are result, different from those moments which are cause. Is it clear that moments of seeing and hearing are different from moments that are wholesome or unwholesome?
You see something you like?
The first moment is just seeing, right? Then there's no idea, and then you start thinking about it, and then you like it immediately. So these two are different. The moment of just seeing and the moment of liking that which you're thinking about. It's different kind of mind, because seeing is just seeing, right? Hearing is just hearing. It's not liking or disliking the sound. It's not liking, disliking what's seen. So these are different. One is the nature of cause, and one is just mere result.
What is the process of the brain?
So, well, basically, whatever you have in your five senses experience, you process, and then you get an output of what's happened. And, well, the thing is about this, I mean, basically, but then you say karma doesn't have really a meaning. That's just like, well, you do... I mean,
it's just an element, just another reality that arises and falls away.
But it also says that whatever I do shouldn't actually, or what does you refer to as strong karma? So when does it get strong? Do I have to do a lot of good things to get a stronger karma, or how do I need to understand that?
I just want to say, let's talk about now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Is there anything now?
Now, this very moment.
Very moment. Is there anything now? Or is there now? What is now? Very close now. Is there anything in this moment?
Well, in this very moment, there's a lot of people with me in the room.
Okay.
That's what I see.
Close your eyes.
Yes.
Many people? Lots of people?
I feel a lot of people
around
me.
No. They cannot be seen, right?
They cannot be seen, but I can feel them.
Different moment. We just talk about now. Okay. One moment at a time.
Okay.
What is now? What is there now?
Well, now is, yeah, it's a moment, and it...
Yes, but what is there now?
I don't understand the question, actually.
What is there now? What is there?
What is real now?
Yeah. What is real?
What is real?
What is the reality now? Not the idea, not the concept, but what is the reality now?
Mm-hmm. I just would like to talk about what is there.
Yeah.
Seeing now?
No, I don't see now. I just say there's...
At your moment, the moment you experience, that is experiencing, what is there?
This very second?
Yes.
I can't say there's nothing, because there's a lot of things around me.
So what is there?
Just one.
But I don't know. Maybe can someone help me?
Is there the idea is that you should try to identify yourself rather
the now,
than
what the
one
now
of us
is.
Telling you.
That's a good.
In order to understand, there must be thinking, considering.
Yeah.
So we talk about now, Is there anything now?
Gave you a very big clue. She said, "Now there must be."
What can be experienced?
Well, there is. Well, like, what can he be experienced?
No. Just now. What is there? Is there now? Is there anything now?
Yes, I'm wrong, Jingjing.
This is the truth. The beginning to understand the truth.
Yeah.
Because there is only a moment at a time, right?
Yes.
So what is there in a moment? What is there?
It was already gone.
Yes, but what is gone?
Well, the moment, basically.
What is there in a moment, in that very moment?
There's been
no,
time.
No. Can you see time? Can you hear time? Can you touch time?
That's an idea.
It's an idea, right? But I get older with time, so somewhat my body experienced the whole time.
Is there thinking?
That's thinking, of course.
In a moment?
Yeah, I think all the time, yeah. And I don't have a moment without thinking.
But there is thinking.
Yes.
One thing is thinking.
Yes.
The moment of thinking is real, is right. Nothing is real at that moment of thinking, only thinking is real.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there is seeing, the moment of seeing. Is it real?
Well, to me, it is real the moment if I see something.
So yes. The moment of seeing is not the moment of thinking at all.
Well, you because...
No, it's, we just
it's
talk
the same.
About
it's not the
moment,
same.
No idea yeah. in between. Yeah. So seeing is a moment,
mm-hmm.
and thinking is a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing is a moment. Liking is a moment. Everything in a moment,
mm-hmm.
only a moment. Mm-hmm. It has a reason. If it hasn't a reason at all, can there be that reality of that moment? If seeing does not arise, can there be seeing?
No, there can't be seeing.
So seeing arises, right?
Mm-hmm.
From nothing. Before seeing, there is no seeing at all. Before hearing, there's no hearing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And where are they now? Completely gone, forever, absolutely, mm-hmm. never to return again.
But that moment?
Each moment is completely gone.
But
absolutely.
I was just told that they get somewhere stored.
No, I mean the moment itself, that reality. We
oh,
just
the very moment
that.
Is just gone, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we talk about life, the truth of life from the moment of birth
mm-hmm.
up to now and to death.
Mm-hmm.
What are there from moment to moment? There must be different moments.
Mm-hmm.
Some moment is seeing, some moment is hearing, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
They are conditioned to arise, and as soon as it has arisen, it falls away instantly. Unknown right now. Hearing's gone, unknown. Seeing's gone, unknown. Everything just arises and falls away in split seconds, unknown. Mm-hmm. Unknowingly, all the time. So, there are only different realities in one's life. Nothing more than that.
So, ask again, what is there now?
Well, a moment is there, but it's already gone, so...
Yeah, but there are many different kinds of moments, right? Seeing is not hearing, hearing is not thinking, so... You have to... One reality at a
yes.
time, right? So
yes.
What is there now? There must be a reality. Every moment there must be a reality. So you could say thinking, you could say seeing.
Yes.
Because it's now, right?
Yes.
So that's the idea. Come back to the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about these realities. When what is now, what is there now, there is one experience at a time. It could be through the five senses or the mind.
Yep.
So the answer could be anything from hearing, seeing, thinking. Because that's what's happening now for each one of us.
So what is there? Seeing, hearing, thinking, hardness, liking, not liking, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, but no soul, no Daniel, no Sarah.
Well,
only reality.
Well, but that every moment is a brain is processing what's going in, all everything that's going into me. So this is my now. I'm just processing all my. I'm processing my sense. That's what I'm doing, actually. That's my now, my very now.
Right. And this processing, what form does the processing take?
In what form?
Yeah. What do we mean by processing?
Well, it's some movements in my brain, receptors that
by what someone's told us. But in terms of what can be experienced now, what can be directly known. What form does that processing take?
No, I don't understand your question.
Okay, what I'm talking about is this. We were talking earlier about the difference between beings and trees or rocks, for example. And beings we call sentient beings. What is the sentience that we mean by a sentient being that distinguishes a being from just an object?
Well, apparently the five senses, or the ability to experience the moment.
Right. So this is what is real, isn't it? That's happening at the present moment, right?
Yes.
Including the processing,
mm-hmm.
which is part of the sentience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mental activity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's real at the present moment. The mental activity of processing what has been experienced through the sense doors, and the mental activity of thinking about what is being discussed.
So the thinking is now, but stored in the brain and somewhere is an idea that is thought about. So thinking at this moment can be directly known, but stored in the brain can only be thought about.
You're talking about processing. When they're seeing, there's thinking about that which is seen, right? And then there's the seeing again and thinking and thinking and seeing and thinking. Can you appreciate that this is what happens from moment to moment, that they're seeing and then thinking such that at some point this is recognized as a cup and we're thinking about the cup?
Yes,
the glass,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when you're thinking about the brain, that's also just thinking.
Yes.
Right? Same as thinking about the cup, just thinking about the brain. So the reality at that moment is thinking. Right? Even as we think in about the brain and the different functions of the brain, we know the reality of thinking, and it can be understood that this is the, and it is processing. That's how the mind works. So what's the need of thinking about what the scientists say about how the mind works, what happens in the brain? Because right now, it's happening.
Yeah.
And can be understood. Right? This is what we're supposed to understand, the reality that appears now.
Mm-hmm.
There is seeing right now. It's gone, right?
What?
Seeing. There is seeing.
Yes.
And it's gone. Completely. At moment of hearing, there is no seeing at all. A moment of hearing, there must be only hearing and sound, only. No thinking, no seeing at moment of hearing.
Well, I think I can...
The actual moment of hearing, yeah, is not thinking. Because there can be thinking without hearing, without seeing, but there can be thinking.
But I can see and hear at the same time,
yes,
or can I not?
But when there is seeing and no, and when there is thinking and no seeing, you know that they are different.
Yes.
So seeing is different from hearing.
Yes, but I can do it at the same
time. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Just knowing that seeing is a moment.
Yes.
And thinking is a moment.
Yes.
So can seeing think?
At the same moment?
No.
Seeing. Not possible?
It's impossible.
To see and think. See and hear at the same moment.
The seeing cannot think.
Yes, the seeing cannot think.
So
but
what does it do? It cannot think. What does
yes.
it do? What does seeing do?
What does
it
seeing
does not
just,
think.
Just the seeing is receiving of some light in my
that is thinking again.
Yes.
But a moment of seeing, there must be seeing in that which is seen only.
Okay.
Right? And seeing cannot think at all.
Yeah, of course
so
can seeing cannot
think. What does it do? At moment of seeing, the seeing.
I receive a picture of
the
you.
The seeing, we talk about the seeing, not anyone at all.
The
just
seeing?
The seeing. What does it do? What does it do?
The seeing is experiencing.
Experience what?
Well, basically the reflection of light. That's what I see. That's actually how I... Yeah, that's the seeing.
Sometimes you see darkness too.
Yes.
So what does seeing...
But even
seeing,
in darkness is light and this...
Okay, but yeah. What does it do, seeing?
Seeing?
It arises to what?
It experiences.
Just to see.
Yeah, just to see.
So?
It doesn't do anything.
Thinking
just...
arises just to think.
Okay.
No one there at all.
But what makes one think?
Because of the seeing and hearing has fallen away.
It
conditioned thinking.
Conditioned thinking, okay.
Yes. So you think about that which has seen, thought about, heard about?
Excuse me?
So your thinking is about that which has seen and thought about and heard about, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking now?
No, I'm just wondering what...
What do you mean?
No, I'm wondering what is the...
Is wondering real?
Wondering is a thought. Wondering is a... Is a...
It's different from other thoughts.
Oh, it's not different. It's just... It's a question.
Each reality is different.
Okay, but coming back to, can't I see and hear at the same time?
Never. At all. The blind can hear.
Yes.
Without seeing.
Yes, but I can do both, actually. I can
you
see and
I can hear. You
think
that you can,
yes.
But actually, they cannot arise together because their conditions are different. It needs the ear base for seeing to arise.
For hearing.
For hearing.
Yeah.
It is the... For hearing, it is ear-based.
Yeah.
And what else?
What to hear?
At moment of hearing. Only the ear-based cannot condition.
But that would mean if I can't do both at the same time,
never.
Then I wouldn't actually see you.
Never.
I would just hear
just,
you.
If you think just a moment, it cannot
yeah.
be two in a moment.
Then I'm not sure.
Okay, what is a moment?
A moment just passed.
And experiencing.
Oh, I just experienced a moment in here? In this
no,
room.
No. Seeing is a moment. It sees.
Okay.
And
yeah.
thinking is another moment, not of seeing. It hears. This is life.
Okay.
Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. Six worlds, can we say? If nothing arises at all, there is no world at all. If nothing arises, there wouldn't be any world at all. But whatever arises, there is the world. Otherwise, where's the world? What's the world? It has to be that which is there. And that is there must arise. So whatever arises is what is meant by a world, whether it is through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, or body.
Mm-hmm.
So we just talk about this because we understand that actually what is life is only different moments of different realities conditioned by its proper conditions. For the eye, it needs the eye base. For the ear, hearing, it needs the ear base. The ear base cannot condition seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is life, uncontrollable. No one can make it arise at all. Because actually there's no one. But no one can stop that which has arisen from conditions. They depend on the others, each other.
But uncontrollable?
Yes, can you control your thinking?
Oh, yeah.
No.
I can actually control
Can you make
thinking?
It arise?
Hmm?
Can you make thinking arise?
Thinking erase?
Arise, arise.
What do you mean? I can make thinking arise?
Like at this very moment.
Yes.
Can you control what kind of thinking arises right now?
But if you don't want to think about anything, I can just shut it off.
You don't have the idea of arising clear, right?
Not really, because, I mean, I can close my eyes, I can't see you. I can shut my ears, I can't hear you. So I can control the moment.
If there
How
is
are
no,
you going to experience
if there
it?
Is no eyes,
yes.
Can you see me?
No, of course not, yeah.
So it's not you who can control or make anything arise at all.
Yeah, but if I close my eyes, who is controlling my eyes?
If you don't have eyes,
yes.
Can you see me?
Of course not.
So, uncontrollable. You cannot make seeing arise at will.
Yes.
It needs its own proper conditions for its arising. Without the eyes at all, there can never be seeing at all.
Yeah.
The same of every moment, every reality.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to tell you, don't think about the microphone, what do you think happens? You're automatically thinking about the microphone and thinking about not thinking about it.
Of course, yeah.
Right? It's not something that you decide to do, it's just happening.
Well, but you can, I don't know if you ever had that in your life, but let's say you have a bad experience, something is going really bad, your daughter is very sick, and you just feel bad because this thought carries on all the time. And you can try, well, people have the ability to shut off thinking about that because they occupy their mind with something else.
Right, yeah. Right now,
so
I'm thinking yeah. about this room, I'm not thinking about my house.
Yes.
It's just happening by conditions.
Yes, but you could decide to think about
your
house.
Oh, I can start thinking about my house.
Yes.
I can start thinking about my house and not think about this room.
Yes.
And still I'm thinking about the room. There are conditions for thinking about the room.
Thinking has arisen before you can make it arise.
Okay.
No one at all. Is it better to understand that actually there's no self, no one? There are only realities, conditioned realities. Mm-hmm. Is that better?
Mm.
Or better to have I?
Well, it's good to have eyes, if otherwise I can't see.
But with our seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, there cannot be I at all. There cannot be the idea that I see, I hear.
Of course not. Yeah, of course you cannot. Yeah.
Can we say there's mental activity of one kind or another all the time?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can we?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter whether we call it thinking or processing or whatever. Mental activity
There's probably
non-stop.
Yes, of course, there's something going on.
What is touched now?
The touch.
What is touched now?
If I touch something.
Yes, what is something? Touch it.
Yes.
What is there?
Well, table, piece of wood.
thinking. You cannot touch a table.
I cannot touch a table.
Never. So what can you touch? What can the touching touch?
So what I'm touching?
What is touched?
What is experienced at the fingertip when you touch? When you touch the table.
Yes.
But what is actually experienced through the fingers or hand at that moment?
Well, it's a hard surface that I touch. Yeah.
So no one can touch table or things. What is absolutely touched, been touched, must be hardness, softness, heat or cold.
Okay, well, that's basically...
Not one, not anyone, not table, no one, no thing, only...
Well, it's a sense.
Absolute realities. We come to understand what are the absolute realities in life.
And not even surface, actually, at a moment of touching. It's just hardness or warmth. And instantly thinking about hard surface or table. But actually what is touched is just hardness or warmth or coldness.
Yes. Well, that's a way, way to describe
later,
the touching,
the reality,
the sense of touching.
The situation. And when we say it's me touching a table, that's what we call a story of the situation of the present moment rather than the reality in terms of what is being experienced.
And if there was a blind person to touch and he had no idea what he was touching, he wouldn't think it's a table that he's touching, yet there is touching.
Yep.
Now, that you think it's a table because there's seeing.
Of course.
And thinking about that which is seen, right? So the idea is comes because of accumulated memory about different experiences. Right. Like a table, you call it a table because you've learned about tables, the concept. But in the experience itself, there's nothing, just the touching and the hardness or heat, cold, whatever.
So is life permanent?
Whether life is permanent, probably not, because if you die, you lose all your senses.
Even now.
Hmm?
Even now? Yes, just now.
Because earlier we agreed life is just a moment now.
Okay. Well, then that's permanent. There's, oh, well, now, actually, a moment now just disappears, so it can't be permanent then.
Impermanent.
Permanent, yeah, impermanent in that sense. Because once the moment stops.
So that which is not permanent, is it you?
Hmm?
That which is not permanent, is that you?
Well, it's the moment that's not permanent, I would say.
It's gone completely, so you'd gone completely?
If I'm gone completely...
No, the seeing is gone completely.
Yes.
So the eye, at that moment of seeing, is gone too. If there is the idea that seeing is me, it's I who sees. It's gone. No I. It's gone with seeing.
Yes, the eye. Well, the
so
eye
actually, there's no I, because every moment is gone.
Okay, but how do you deal with the fact of the past life then?
Past moments. Gone
so
completely, never to return at all.
Nothing that you experienced 2 minutes ago is there. It's all gone.
Of course, yeah.
That's the same with past lives, all gone. The moment just before gone, now is gone. Another moment is appearing now, again and again. So everything is gone.
So understanding is the best thing in one's life.
Please excuse me. It appears to be as one seamless whole, but it's really interesting concept, points on a line. So it's just one moment of consciousness or citta awareness and it falls away. I don't know that there will be another one following, but it's a continuum of, for example, this I base cognizes the object which arises, then the ear cognizes sound, vibration. And when I think about it and I touch this, this is distilled down to the its hardness, I think table, so it's just thinking stories. And it's all, it appears as a line, but it's all points. And it's indistinguishable. It happens so fast, so quickly. Each moment, life pass away.
What experiences visible object?
I-base cognizes.
Not I-base, seeing consciousness.
Yes,
because
yes.
The I-base is a rupa, a physical
right,
phenomena.
Right.
So the visible object impinges on the eye sense,
yes,
and it's seeing consciousness, mm-hmm, the citta, which experiences.
Yes.
And
yes,
at
yes,
a moment of what experiences sound?
That's citta again.
Hearing consciousness.
Yeah.
So the sound impinges on ear sense, and it's the
yes, yes,
hearing, the citta, which experiences it. And what is experienced is just sound, not a vibration, just sound at that moment.
Right, vibration is the story. I was already
the story
going
about
too fast.
What is heard. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yes, Sarah yeah, broke it down beautifully. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
I know that Tam had a question she wished to ask.
Ajahn, can we say that we can know about the can know one's own understanding depends on their behavior or their actions? Because we tend to think that usually for those people who study lots of Dhamma, they will we expect them to be less, to have less akusala.
That is expectation.
But actually, if just study a Dhamma without like a changing for the positive way or becoming better, so
expectation
the study
again.
I mean, we understand that only one reality understands Panya. So if Panya doesn't arise, there's no understanding, and no understanding is accumulated. So it's Panya. Panya arises regardless of the situation.
Yes, but usually when more panya is accumulated, maybe is there kind of some changes in the way you behave, right?
Mm-hmm. If there are expectations for oneself that the more understanding there is, the better the behavior that there is, that there will be more kusala and less akusala, and that one will no longer get cross, or one will no longer be concerned about money or this or that. That is expectation about the future. It's not understanding reality now. And it will also lead to expectations of others. One will also have the wrong idea about others, that because they've heard more Dharma, they should behave in this way or that way. And that causes a lot of problems in life, because instead of understanding what appears now and with detachment, there's always lobha or expecting or thinking it should be another way, and then one will always be dissatisfied when it's not as one would wish or expect. So that's why actually it has to come back to this moment, no expectations at all of what will arise, and that is how one comes to be a more understanding person. One knows that, just like we were saying, each reality now is conditioned and uncontrollable. is like that for everyone. So more understanding conditions, more kindness, more metta, more acceptance of whatever arises in life and however anyone may behave. So it's always back to this moment.
Yes, so it's like you said, the last part, it also means like when there is more understanding, there's less judge for others, and also at the same time you can think the same way for other people. If they have more understanding, they would be less.
But
that is expectation.
Yeah, that's expectation, because understanding, if there's understanding and seeing the importance of understanding, even while we're thinking like that, understanding will see that it's more important to understand than to speculate and have expectations. Just understand, because there are realities now which need to be understood. So no idea about what will happen, but moha now is arising, not understanding.
So, what do you mean by expectation?
Expectations is attachment, lobha, thinking things should be a certain way, wanting it to be a certain way, not accepting, not detached from reality that is conditioned at this moment. And no one likes it when other people have expectations of us, when other people think we should be like this and not like this and should always be sweet and nice or something like that. So we can see also when we have expectations of others, it's the opposite of metta or kindness. When there's metta or understanding, then it's the opposite of expectation, thinking it should be a certain way. So expectations make life very difficult for us. So of course there are bound to be expectations. When we come here, there are expectations of Ajahn or anyone. But actually the expectation is strong clinging to oneself, wanting things to be a certain way, leading to dissatisfaction when it's not that way. It's the opposite of understanding and accepting life at this moment, just as it is, one citta at a time, whatever is conditioned now. It's not understanding the conditioned nature of realities.
Yeah, somehow I understand, but it's like also somehow it is like leads to what is the use of studying Dharma? And
the use of studying Dharma is for the sake of understanding life at this very moment, understanding what is real right now. The point of studying Dharma is not to make it oneself a better person, because that's clinging. It's not for the sake of I having more metta or I having more kindness to my family. It's just for the sake of understanding, because it's not I or you or anyone. So understanding whatever appears as it is, and that's the way it does its work, that's the way it develops naturally. And naturally conditions other kinds of wholesomeness. But it's a very slow path, so any expectation impedes or hinders that development of understanding, because behind it is the strong idea of self that can somehow control or make it a certain way. It takes a lot of understanding and a lot of confidence and a lot of patience to appreciate that it is just understanding for the sake of understanding that's important, not for me, not for the world, but just for the sake of understanding.
When we say what's the point, it seems to imply that we would like to see the benefits immediately or very soon. But of course, we know that in fact the benefits come over a long period of time. Does it make life better for us if we're having problems in life, for example? Well, not necessarily, because the ups and downs of life go on regardless, and they are conditioned by past deeds. So things could get tougher before they get better. But we know that all the situations that we are concerned about are only temporary. Nothing stays the same for long. But we should not think about the benefits of understanding in the context of solving the problems we have in life.
Also, we all understand that akusla is akusla. Lopa is akusla. It's bad, unwanted. Dosa is akusla. It's bad, unwanted. But moha is the root of all akusla. It's because of moha there's dosa. It's because of moha there's lopa. So what's more important? To develop understanding? No?
And we can see even now, just reflecting about dharmas, that the problems really do come down to the attachment, the aversion, and ignorance now, like when we picked up Nina and she was feeling some discomfort and thinking about her situation. But when we started talking about realities and appreciating there are just these different dharmas arising by conditions in life, then at those moments one forgets about oneself for a moment because of a little bit of understanding, but not because of expectation or trying to be a certain way or thinking that one shouldn't have those unwholesome tendencies. And I'm also reminded about when a friend was complaining about some difficulties in life. The water wasn't hot enough and there were bugs in the room and this and that. And Nijan said the kind of problems we think about in life are nothing to the problems in the hell realm. So if we can't get used to these very little problems in life that we think are so important because of our kilesa, our defilements, then how will the courage and patience and other qualities be developed enough to deal with real problems in life?
Kuntam, and I think we had a conversation in Thai about a week ago. And one other thing is that the Buddha didn't give any kind of pattern or any kind of exercise for one to follow. And why is that? Is one cannot actually set up expectations for understanding. What understanding can understand is the dharmas that are happening, occurring right now. So to set up expectation for understanding of what akusla can be let go in the future, that is what hinders the understanding right now that could happen and could understand even this moment. So to think about benefits is actually to hope for understanding that cannot be arisen except to understand what is now.
But basically you're saying, so if there's no expectation or nothing, there's nothing has consequences somewhat, then you can behave whatever, then it today, this moment, this action doesn't have a function in the future somewhat. So basically if through my actions, like, that wouldn't have something in the future. I try to be a good person and help everyone and everything, but I cannot expect that someone might help me. Of course, that's true, but it might happen anyway. So, but it also means that if I behave not well, nothing might happen to me. So, that's my question. Yeah.
What he means is that it sounds like when we're talking about not having expectations, it's sounding like there is no value in doing good and no harm in doing bad because it won't affect what happens in future. But actually, that's the opposite of what is being said.
Well, what we are constantly reminded is that even those expectations is what we are thinking about right now. So when we understand, there's understanding that does a slowly letting go of wrong views. And instead of hoping for something in the future, we actually understand now. And by understanding now, we actually letting go about hopes or any conditions that we actually create for ourselves to be to suffer in the future.
And that expectation, what we're saying is also that expectation itself is unwholesome. So we're saying that means that we're discouraging unwholesome. We're encouraging wholesomeness. But then at the same time, we're also saying the highest kind of wholesomeness is understanding. It is understanding which brings about other kinds of wholesomeness. So no expectation doesn't mean we don't believe. It means that we have confidence that good brings good results, bad brings bad.
I have a question about that. People will remark or say, well, bad things happen to good people, or good things happen to bad people. You know, the jerks have, you know, a stroke of luck, so to speak. So could someone address that a bit? Thank you.
So in simple terms, we were talking a little bit about karma earlier. What is good, like kindness and generosity and understanding, will bring good results in future, but we have no idea when and without any expectation, because as soon as there is an expectation, for example, if we do a good deed because we want a good result, it's no longer good at that moment. It's attachment, doing it for oneself. So what is good naturally will bring its own results, and what is bad will bring its own results. But when there is expectation, then it's just more attachment. And we talk about a good person or a bad person, but actually there are wholesome cheaters, unwholesome cheaters. Even the what we call the very bad person may have some moments of kindness to their children or moments of generosity, and the one we call very good may have still has lots of attachment or anger or whatever. So instead of thinking a good person and bad results and so on, we can just be confident that what is good in life brings its own results, but without any expectation or thinking it should be now or what have you, because these are just impersonal dharmas.
Let me say something, but then that means also like praying is absolutely useless, because you just sit there and people pray. Most of the time when people pray, they hope for something to happen. And
so we agree. Yeah,
useless. Yeah, so it's...
it's not just useless, it's unwholesome. And that has consequences.
Yeah.
It means you accumulate more unwholesome, more desire. Yeah.
And why does one pray?
Well, most of the time, I mean, I just know from the Christian religion, yeah. I can say that people, they will pray to God because they think there's something there.
But if we don't know God,
yeah, of course, they can't. But of course, no one knows God, but they just assume it's a concept. For me, this religion is anyways, for me, it's something, it's a instrument to control the people's mind. Well, people will pray to God and wish for something most of the time. And, well, sometimes they would wish for themselves or for other people. And there's seldom actually just praying for the sake of praying. And, so most of the time the praying is actually an act of wishing, I would say.
Yeah. Out of ignorance.
Hmm?
Out of ignorance.
Probably, yeah. Because, I mean, I remember at... when I was young, there was once a teaching, I don't know who told me that, but I mean, if God would actually do what I'm wishing tomorrow, I want to, whatever, win the lottery, and the other day I win the lottery, then, well, it's pure luck, of course, but the teaching was basically that person that if God would actually do what he would we would wish from them, then it wouldn't be a God, for example, because I can't command someone else to do something for me. but I'm just the thing. But basically praying. But most, there's so many religion where everyone sits down and prays is actually absolutely useless, according to this. It's actually even bad to do it.
Very.
So
actually encouraging self-centeredness.
One ignore cause and conditions. One expect that this thing will happen tomorrow, this thing will happen in some month's time, but not knowing that for everything to happen, there's cause and conditions for it.
So this is why expectations is actually not understanding about causes and conditions. So it's actually that wrong understanding that things should be a certain way, rather than understanding that dharmas arise, which are anatta, and just arise by conditions.
I mean, there can be confidence in Pandya, and the effects of Pandya. We can see that, we can understand that Pandya leads to other kinds of wholesome. So, but it's not like expecting that it would happen. But that seeing that Pandya, this is the function of Pandya and how it supports other wholesomeness.
And at the beginning, Daniel asked me whether Buddhism is a religion. So now, having heard about all these different realities, how would you answer?
What a religion is. Well, religion is for me still, listen, it's an instrument created by smart people to basically control the people's way of thinking. And that you can go back for years. I mean, there was...
So, but Sarah was asking you,
yeah,
about Buddhism.
Whether this sounds like a religion, not really.
Because a religion basically depends on a blind faith system.
Yes.
Like praying and expecting for a result, or believing that a god can solve all one's problems, for example. Whereas what Buddhism is about, what we're talking about, is understanding life at this moment. So it's not a faith or religion in that sense.
Actually, the term Buddhism is somewhat of a misnomer, because it's not about the Buddha, but about the way things are. Laws of the universe, we would say, universal truths, because he taught the truth about things, universal truths. If that is in fact what we are studying, then it's not Buddhism as such, it's the universal truths.
Well, I was just about to say that even if there's a religion out there that does not believe in God, maybe Taoism or something, but given that it's not about the moment, about the reality of moment, it cannot be useful, because it would be based on speculation and not understanding the truth.
And I was just going to ask Tiny Tam on your question about expectations, and also about whether there should be more wholesomeness from studying the Dharma. What do you think now?
I think that sounds, even I have the same thinking, but then just during the observations from Vietnam, and I just collecting like a review and comment from other people, and just want to hear more about that. Because also I know it's hard to say, because usually in the context of the societies and many people practice meditations, usually it's their kind of instant effect for them. Like when they meditation, they feel like they're more calm, and they, like before, they used to be very angry, but with the practice is make them like a nicer person. But in contrary, for those who just studying Dhamma, it seems like playing all the time. And they see that there must be difference between the people who practice Dhamma and who is not.
Sorry, it seems like playing all the time.
Just like...
Like we're just kind of having fun or acting very naturally, whereas to those people it seems like the meditators look very serious and more calm, and they're not kind of laughing or telling silly jokes. So again, what is the purpose? And if we agree the purpose is to develop understanding, it has to be very natural in life, and one has to be very truthful, because if one tries so hard to appear quiet or calm or peaceful, then this is actually more clinging to oneself.
Yes, I think the truthfulness is very important, because otherwise only one know for oneself whether what is the state of mind, what is in one person. I think outside people cannot tell anything.
I just wanted to comment that these are based on the teachings of Buddha Gautama, and that other people became enlightened. So it may appear that this is another organized religion and there are people selling lottery tickets outside the temple for people who've put things in bowls for merit and so forth. But it's more than one person enlightened, and so I have the sense that this works.
Maybe that's just a story.
Can I ask Jonathan a question? Because you mentioned time. So what is time? Because what I learned today, there are moments, and there's just the moment. So there can't be time, because you said there's no chains of reactions. That's what you said. So what is time then, in the sense? How do I need to understand that?
Time, place, distance, speed, just ideas, which when we hear them, they have meaning, but they are essentially ideas. At the present moment, whatever is real can be directly experienced. And time is not one of those things that is real at the present moment. Useful concept, but a concept nonetheless.
I mean, like distance.
You're thinking of one concept in relation to another, a beginning and an ending, starting point, ending point. Same with time, you're thinking of events, one event as against another. It's just thinking.
And that the self is actually not real, it's simply a point of reference, it's just a concept.
Again, it's concept of what?
The self.
It's time. Time.
The time. But it's of human being. It's a human concept, maybe. Or the concept of maybe of the... of thinking.
Thinking about?
Well, different moments. Kind of the...
With our reality arising and falling away, can there be time?
Of course not. There can't be time.
So we use present, past and future, because of the arising and falling away of realities. Like yesterday was yesterday, and tomorrow was tomorrow. Without realities, there can never be tomorrow.
Yes, that's true.
So once again, actually just thinking about moments of seeing and hearing and thinking and smelling and tasting and touching and thinking without those realities. No idea about time or place
would exist. Earlier we agreed that there's mental activity of one kind or another all the time. Can that mental activity be stopped?
Well, you can shoot a person dead, then he's probably stopped. But
for oneself.
For oneself, no. It just continues non-stop. Yeah.
It can't be stopped. That is the nature of things. Continuous mental activity.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what affects the mental activity? The mental activity concerns things that are being seen and heard at the present moment.
Yeah.
And then there can be thinking about things that have happened in the past, depending again on what has been seen and heard in the past.
Right.
And the way one thinks about those things depends on one's dispositions. What one person likes, another person may dislike. Mm-hmm. The liking and disliking of what is seen and heard will depend on whether those things have been liked or disliked in the past.
Yeah.
And those past tendencies or dispositions, of course, cannot be changed. And that is why we say that the thinking cannot be controlled, because it's conditioned by dispositions.
Yeah.
And so the present thinking also accumulates and becomes part of the past predispositions.
Yeah, makes sense.
Happening by conditions, we say by conditions.
Yeah.
And Tiny Tum, if friends think that, oh, this can't be any understanding of the Dharma because we're just having fun and coming here and there, whereas those meditators at the temple seem to be very calm, does it matter what people think?
No, for me, I think no, because only one knows for oneself. Mm. And I also understand that the accumulations, like everybody has one's own accumulations. And usually for akusala, accumulation is much more than the kusala. So it takes time and patience for understanding.
And when there is more confidence that what's important is understanding now, then one's less concerned about what others think about it, because one's confident that it is the understanding that matters, no matter what the accumulations are.
Yes.
And one can, if one has an opportunity, point it out to those people that the goal is not to stop smiling or to be so serious all the time. The goal is understanding in life very naturally. And so that's why it's not a matter of wearing a certain costume or following a rule or behaving like someone else, but very naturally, whatever one's nature or however one's life goes, developing more understanding.
Yes. And I also think that those comment is also because the lack of confidence in understanding, because if they really understand, it makes a difference.
And those people who go and meditate and look so calm, do they actually understand what calm is? And how does one know it is calm and not just more and more attachment being developed?
Yeah.
So like you say, we can only know for ourselves.
Yes.
Can life be controlled?
Can life be controlled? Well, no, you can't control what you think. What I learned today, you can't control what you see, you can't control what you hear, because it just happens on you.
Yes, because it's happened by conditions.
You can just control your action.
No. You mean you can control your seeing, hearing, smelling, thinking?
Well, now I can control. yes, well, what was interesting, I mean, it's a very practical way of thinking, because actually after, if I think, if I get the concept now, it's nothing's really a problem, because it's anyway just a moment, and somewhat, okay, well, it might have consequences, but if I accept every moment as it is, it will pass, so...
It has arisen.
It has already passed, so it's actually, there's nothing bad or good, so it's just very, it's a very practical way of thinking, for me.
No?
Well, thinking, understanding the world.
There are wholesome realities and unwholesome realities.
Okay.
Some are bad, some are good.
Okay, so just keep thinking for the good things then.
Control.
Okay, thank you.
You said about I can control this and that, but what we've been talking about all afternoon is actually no I. So not I that sees, I that hear, I that thinks, not I that can do anything. So that is the heart of the Buddha's teachings. No I, no soul, no me to be found, just different realities arising by conditions beyond anyone's control. Something to consider.
I think you said a minute ago, but I can decide what to do. But as we were talking about earlier, what we decide to do is based on all those past dispositions that have been accumulated. So that decision is also conditioned by...
Your decision has been already made in the past.
No. Well, not made, but it's being made in the present on the basis of conditions that have been accumulated. So we think that we are deciding this, that, or the other, but in fact it's just the way that the thinking is conditioned, just like the reaction to what is seen and heard depends on what we like and dislike from the past.
For example, I have the intention to pick up a glass. Then to prove my point, if I believed in control, I decide not to. And then I decide to do it again and not to. It seems like there's control, right?
Your brain did it already.
It's not brain, but you can begin to understand. You can begin to understand that there are conditions that
yes.
lead to that.
Yeah, I understand.
Oh, last word. But to link it with Kuntam's point, it's through hearing the teachings that the wholesomeness can grow and the unwholesome can be let go, but through understanding and hearing the teachings that we can hear and we can consider. So everything is already arisen.